Welcome to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but my name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. And I'm so excited for you to hear this episode. Joining me today is Marissa Thomas, who is the head of brand for the incredible company Bloom & Wild. She talks to me all about COVID, what happened to the business. We get a little bit behind the curtain of Bloom & Wild. We understand about their tech, how they managed to pivot the business as COVID hit. Also all about how they understand their customers, how they've done their thoughtful marketing campaign and also got another 130 companies to join them in that movement. She also talks to me about her incredible journey, how she's gone from agency to now in-house and the difference between those, what she wished she'd taught herself at the age of 18, and also her little bit of a guilty pleasure, which I can't wait for you to hear. Honestly, this episode is just so good. I felt like I was sat down with someone that I've known for so long, but we've literally just met today. So I can't wait for you to hear it because I just thoroughly enjoyed the conversation that we had. So much value. You're going to get so much out of it and so many tips and tricks, bits about company culture, bits about interview techniques. There's just a bit of everything in there. I can't wait for you to hear it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of I Shouldn't Say This, But. Thank you so much for joining me today, Marissa. I want to delve straight in because there's so much I want to go through because your journey is so interesting and the brand. I'm absolutely obsessed with Bloom & Wild and I know that the listeners will be as well. So do you want to tell me a bit about your career, how you've got to where you are now, and the journey that you've taken?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started agency side and it was a bit of a strange one. So I went to university. I started a degree in creative advertising strategy, but within the year, I kind of felt like advertising was something I'd always wanted to do. I was kind of eager and hungry to start doing it rather than learning about it. And like, honestly, when I say it's something I wanted to do, I think from about 9 years old, when I asked my mum why TV adverts were really rubbish and she told me I can do something about it, I just kind of wanted to do that. So I found an opportunity to join a tech startup actually that was working with clients to kind of do some of the original Facebook style game activations. And joined them and then kind of shortly afterwards joined an SEO agency. So I did that for a little bit, kind of moved around the boutique agency kind of field and really enjoyed that kind of focusing on content marketing. It was when all of these techniques were really new. There was lots of exciting stuff. Social media was, organic social was a kind of completely different world to what it is now, as was kind of the content that you could create for brands on their blogs. But I started to realize that what I really enjoyed was figuring out ways to look at what people were talking about and find a way for a brand to be talking about that too and make sure that there's kind of like a cultural relevance, but a brand relevance to it as well. So an opportunity at the New York Times came up and I moved there maybe about 4 years ago to join their branded content studio. And that was a really amazing opportunity. What they're doing there at T-Brand is taking the kind of journalistic principles of the of New York Times and working with brands to find ways to tell their stories in ways that they wouldn't be able to do by themselves. And I thought that was just a super interesting concept. It was something that was amazing to be involved with. I focused on audience development, which was really around figuring out what people are reading. The New York Times has a huge subscriber base, so we had access to loads of information and what people were interested in reading, what kind of angles to certain stories they were interested in. And then our job was to figure out how we could take a brand and tell their story in a way that we knew our readers would be interested in. And then beyond that, how we can start to break down those stories and tell them across social media. So that's what I was doing up until the moment that I saw a role go live at Bloom & Wild. My wife, the first labs that she sent me were from Bloom & Wild, and I think I've just loved the brand ever since. I'd been thinking about going in-house for a while, kind of had that, I was having that kind of crisis of really loving working on different projects, but getting jealous of my clients being the ones that get to go and like run with the idea. So once I saw it, and it was like a brand that I loved, an opportunity that just sounded absolutely amazing, and a business that was like going through amazing growth, I moved there, and yeah, I've been in Bloom and Well for 2 years, and it's been really, really, really awesome.
That's amazing. What were the flowers that you received from your wife?
There's the Harper, which we still have today. It's a all year round bouquet. It changes name halfway through to the Piper, depending on some of the foliage changes. But yeah, it's still one of my faves.
Nice. That's such a lovely story. And the brand is so strong as well. The first thing I want to ask is, what was your favourite TV advert as a child then that made you really spark that passion in advertising?
I loved all of the silly ads, so that, like, you know, when you've been tangoed, like, they were brilliant. But recently I was reminded, because Renault Clio ran those new ads last year, which kind of featured a same-sex couple, and it reminded me of the Papa Nicole ads they used to do.
They were so good, weren't they?
It's like they're taking you on this cinematic, like, story. And actually, a lot of car ads, I feel, were a lot, like, they were a bit... they were more fun. That's my memory of them. They were more playful. There were a few more characters in it rather than it just being about the kind of features and benefits. But yeah, I just, those two really stand out as ones that I remember.
You've Been Tangoed is always the one I pick as well.
Yeah.
And the Christmas one with the boy standing on the yellow pages. So I'd love to talk to you about your role at Bloom and Wild. What exactly does it entail?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the head of brand, and it's a really interesting setup. So within the marketing team, kind of growth, retention and brand all sit within their separate teams and then work quite closely together, but kind of have their individual focuses. So it means that we get to, in some ways, some days it feels like we're operating almost like an in-house agency. We've got a creative team, and I work really closely with our head of creative, and with them to look at the ways that we're creating new assets and new ways of communicating. But then more broadly, we focus on like our overall messaging and brand strategy, which then feeds into our marketing teams, as well as stuff that we're going to be talking about next year, products that we're going to be pushing, and ways that we can kind of create amazing, exciting new tech to bring that to life. So my time is kind of split, partly focused on the future, working with our head of creative on what our new ranges should look like, how we can, like, what insight can I pull together for her to help us create products that are more exciting than what's available in the market, and really kind of speak to the customers that we have, and we feel like we're really close to them. And then the other half of my time is spent on campaign activation, working with my team that's got copywriters, social media managers, across the brand and creative team. We've then got designers and press to figure out how, from season to season, as our product changes, because it's flowers, our messaging and approach kind of alters as well. It's really interesting. I realized when I joined, you kind of have this idea that flowers are for specific occasions, like birthdays and Mother's Day. But the amazing thing about Bloom and Wild, or the great thing about my job, is that I get to focus on the fact that our customers are super thoughtful, and actually what we're seeing is, of course, people send flowers for big birthdays and Mother's Day, Valentine's Day, but actually it's those just because moments that we think are like really rich, and that's the exciting part of my job, is trying to tap into those really beautiful, unique and individual reasons why people send flowers to each other, and trying to bring that to life and tell that story.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about that. I'll jump ahead of myself a little bit, because I think it's probably the right time to do it. That sort of because moment, have you seen that change throughout this year? Has there been more people thinking of others whilst we've been in lockdown, or going through this COVID pandemic? Is that something that you think has changed consumer behaviour?
Yes, like without a shadow of a doubt. It's been incredible to see. I think we've been feeling really, really lucky that we've been able to continue trading, and it's been a phenomenal year for us. We went into lockdown as Mother's Day was about to happen, so we had like a really good benchmark to like see if customer behavior was going to change, and we kind of had our busiest week of the year normally, and then it just continued.
Wow.
And yeah, I think that that is exactly that. It's these like thoughtful, thinking of you moments. I think everybody was reaching out to each other, and there's only so much that like a WhatsApp or a phone call can do. And actually a lot of us were really exhausted, and I think sometimes just taking the time to write a note in a card and send someone flowers is a really great way of keeping in touch with someone without having to call everybody and spend like hours and hours on the phone, kind of when you're also like looking for that headspace. So it was, yeah, incredible to see. I think we're also hopefully seeing a bit of a behavior change of, I feel like lockdown has given people the license to just let the people in their life that they care about know that they love them, and somehow it became acceptable to just be like, I'm thinking of you. And maybe beforehand we were all living really busy lives, it kind of felt like, unless there's a real reason, like you've got a new job or it's your birthday, it's hard for me to just kind of out of the blue send you something to say that like, I love you or I'm thinking of you.
It feels like it's made us softer.
Yes, definitely.
I think it's the time though. I think you're right. I think having that extra time to be able to really think about others rather than just running from one thing to another has helped us all become a little bit softer and more thoughtful. It's nice, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing.
So wonderful. I wonder whether also it's that like classic, you know that your friends, and because that's what we see, like the majority of our customers are women sending flowers to women, and they're for small reasons. It's not big grand gestures. It's your sister, your best friend, your mum. And I wonder whether in the back of your head, you always knew that you could go and see these people. And then as soon as you were told you cannot go, it just kind of unlocked all of this like emotion, and like suddenly it seems like people are suddenly a lot more grateful for the people they have in their lives.
Oh, it makes me feel a little bit like,
that's been my experience since March. It's been an emotional rollercoaster.
I bet it has. I bet there's been loads of moments throughout that time. I want to ask you about your job. So what's your favourite and what's your least favourite part about your job?
So the favourite part has to be as a young company, I think we're like set up in a way where we've got like a really flat structure, which means that everybody is constantly sharing ideas and information and conversations that they're having with customers or other teams. And it also means that we have incredible access to our customer. So our customer delight team share with us the stories every day of customers that days have been made, or that either through us or through the person that sent them flowers, and getting to read those stories every day is just like, it's incredible and it's so heartwarming, and there's really, really lovely stuff comes through. We, as a company, everyone tries to spend a bit of time just speaking to customers through our customer delight channels, and I guess within the brand team, we're lucky because it's easy for me to kind of jump onto our Instagram and have just a quick look through the stories we're being tagged in, the DMs we're getting, and like, if you ever need like a little boost, or if you're having a stressful day, just reading through those comments that's definitely my favorite part of the day. Just knowing that what we're doing is like facilitating people being able to like send love and that feeling to each other is awesome.
That must be incredible. Yeah. What did you say? Customer
delight team. Yeah.
Customer delight team is such an amazing name. Like, you must just be happy all the time.
Like, it is a really happy place to work. I think, yeah, absolutely. Like, to answer the kind of the least favorite part, and honestly, I think it's probably the fact that there's just so much that we want to do. It can be overwhelming to know that like all these incredible rich moments are happening, but we've also got a big job to do day to day that sometimes I just feel like we're not able to bring this to life. And it's, I think, as a natural storyteller, that's actually the biggest opportunity, but quite a frustrating part of this role, is knowing that there is so much richness that is hard to get in front of our customers sometimes. And it's great that it's there, but if people could see it, I just feel like we would have this multiplier effect of people just feeling happy and heartwarmed by it.
Yeah, it definitely feels like Bloom and Wild has got a place that it could play in that as well. But probably as a consumer, you only see it as a one-way
interaction
rather than a two-way. You're seeing more and more now of like companies using UGC content to really enforce that brand value. And it's so nice to, when it's genuine like yours would be, I think it would work really well. Yeah. But yeah, it must be so nice to be able to read all those and see the joy that it's been, that's been spread from the deliveries that are being made. I want to ask though, what's your biggest challenge of your career been so far?
It's a really good question. I actually think, and I know, I think we were going to come onto this later, but if I was looking at my career as a whole, I think this like battle of, is it better to be in-house or is it better to be agency side, is probably the biggest challenge that like I've experienced. And it's like, there are individual challenges or moments that I can like recall where I feel like, oh gosh, that was like a really stressful point. But I think more broadly, when you're trying to reflect on like what you want to do, or if you know the impact that you want to make, whether, and for me, that's through brands and like how they play a part in culture, it's hard to know whether it's easier to sit outside of a brand and be able to have that like influence of, I don't have to worry about the ins and outs of what's going on in your company, I can just say this big idea and hope that I can push it through. Or if you want to be the person inside, like chipping away and making sure that that happens and that the values live through. And it's really, I think both tasks are really hard, and they come with like the frustrations of either not, if your agency side, not being enough in the detail to feel like you can maybe make the change like seamlessly throughout the whole of the business. And if you're in-house, it's kind of like you restrict yourself with the ideas that you have sometimes. I think it can be harder to tell yourself to be brave.
Yeah, when you're in the confines of your own comfort bubble. So then it's like our job then to kind of push people outside of that and try and push the boundaries as an agency, isn't it? Which do you prefer, do you think? Or is it kind of like there's pros and cons to either?
I think there's pros and cons to either, which is why I think it is like a real, like a real challenge. At the moment, I think it's incredible to be like in with the brand and changing that difference. But yeah, it means that like a big part of my job, or like a big challenge of it, is like I have to be the person that makes sure that we're trying to think of like bolder and bigger ideas. And if we're working with agencies, like knowing that they're the ones that can help like lift us out of this, and kind of like telling myself, okay, that's the role of being in-house, is like we know our customers, we know our brand inside out, and that's a real strength as well. And there's the opportunity with that is that everything that you do has meaning, and that you can ensure that nothing feels random, it makes sense to the customer. But yeah, it's tricky to remind yourself that like sometimes you just gotta like think out there and then know that the business case can come a little bit later.
Yeah, I suppose it's choosing the right brand as well, isn't it, for you, that fits with your values and somewhere that you know that you can push forward if you're going to go down the client side route. I suppose it's the same with any company that you join, but you've making sure that obviously you had a lovely story, Blooming Wild, and you had a connection with the brand before you started.
Yeah.
Do you think that's very important if you're choosing a role in-house?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I guess you could look at it two ways. It's like either, and for me it was, yeah, the excitement was in, I already love this brand, and there's like heaps that could still be done. Knowing that you're going to have that passion is like important. I could see it another way as well. Like, I guess you could see a brand where you feel like there's opportunity or like a need for maybe a little bit of internal disruption, and that could like, that could be a motivation within itself. It depends on who you're working with, right? And I think that the best thing about Blooming Wild is like the, I guess the company fit, the people that are there. Aaron, our founder, is just an incredible guy, and it means that you know that you're going to be listened to. And it's the same, I guess, wherever you go, like even if it's that challenge of they're not quite there yet, knowing that there's enough other people in the business that are going to listen or are willing to be challenged. Yeah.
That's good. That would be great advice for everyone listening who's kind of thinking of where their next step might be. I'm going to do some quick fire questions now, just some like nice things just to learn a bit more about you. What's one thing you'd wish you'd know when you were 18?
Stop looking at what other people are doing. I think I had like huge regrets about whether I was making the right decision leaving university. I kind of saw my friends with this like perceived success because they were achieving and I was earning nothing and doing a lot of like lackey work. But I think stop comparing yourself. And it's the same now, like LinkedIn is terrible for it. It can really look like people are accomplishing at a different rate to you. It doesn't matter like what age you start doing something. It doesn't matter how long it takes you to get there.
Comparison culture. I was exactly the same. I think that's probably the same as what even as I went through my 20s, still looking at friends who'd moved their lives on and had a family, and I was working, and it's like, it's just not healthy, is it? You're on your own path, and it's making sure yourself's happy, not comparing to everyone else's.
You start to set goals based off of other people rather than looking at, like, what is it that's important to you? And often, if you reflect on that, it's probably not like having this title by this age. It's like being in a place where I get to do this. Comparison culture is a great way of calling it. It's just terrible.
It is terrible, but that's a nice way of thinking about it as well. What do you want to achieve, and then how do you get yourself there, rather than I should be at this stage and this level? And yeah, it's a tricky one, and I think social media has got a role to play in that, because people put, as you say, like LinkedIn, you only see a certain amount of people's lives, and it's usually only the good stuff. So yeah, I think it's a tricky one, and I think it's something that we need to tackle as an industry.
Yeah.
So you've talked about your role. You said it's very diverse. You've got a lot of things that you need to tackle day to day. How do you relax or switch off?
Oh, at the moment, I've gotten to this terrible habit. My wife hates it. Like, I run a bath with like the intention of reading a book and feeling like I'm going to have a moment to explore another world and switch off. I end up on TikTok for about an hour.
Done any dances yet?
I don't see many dances, so I don't know what's happened to the algorithm, but I seem to have ended up on like the very, very LGBT, very, very Asian side of TikTok. And I'm loving it. It's great. I feel like videos keep surfacing on my For You page, which just say, like, if you're seeing this video, you're too old to be on TikTok. And I'm like, no.
That's what they keep saying to me in work when I keep making them do TikToks with me.
So we've been trying to get the cat TikTok famous, but it's not happening.
Oh, no. Well, I'll send you some tips from our TikTok experts of how you can get the cat famous.
I cannot wait, yes.
It's funny, though, isn't it? You go down a TikTok hole and you're in it for hours.
Yeah.
I describe it as like the best of the internet in one place, and I don't have to leave it. I can just keep going and going.
But, you know, I was thinking about it this morning, and I was like, it has the thing that was great about YouTube, and I don't spend as much time on YouTube now, but like, it's a different type of internet where I don't feel like I leave my time with it thinking that I need to buy more stuff or like something else. And I think that's why it's such good escapism. It just feels like it's just silly content that takes me back to a nicer time.
And I find it quite a positive space as well. I think obviously Twitter now is such a negative. TikTok seems a lot more positive and in like loads more inclusion, and I love it. I could be in there for hours as well. That's probably one of my guilty pleasures. To me, one of the most important and most underrated skills of an effective leader is the ability to listen, and an empathetic listening is probably the most important thing that I think as a leader you should demonstrate. So what do you think makes a good leader?
Yeah, I really agree with you on the empathy side of things. I think, I guess part of empathy and empathetic leadership for me is like showing vulnerability is really important. And I know it because like the people that I've reported into or the best managers that I've had, the moments that I've started to feel like I can be more open and honest is when I've kind of seen them let their guard down as well. And I think I try and do that. Like if I'm struggling with something, I'll let them know, so that it's really important to me that I don't ever portray this kind of bulletproof, I know how to do everything or nothing goes wrong kind of persona, so that my team are able to let me know like when they're struggling with something and feel that we can solve it together. The reason I think that's really important is because I also I try really hard not to be micro, and I would rather create, like, I think to truly create a space where people feel like it's okay to fail or get it wrong, like you need to show people that you also fail and get it wrong, and that's so important. Second to that is like making sure that you can have fun. Like I read this article in the New York Times about like how it's important to have play in your life as an adult. And I think it's really true. And if your life is, you know, spent at work a lot, like being able to be playful or know that it's okay to be silly, or if a meeting's getting nowhere, like maybe you just need to kind of move it into a bit of a strained and playful space for a little bit, just to get people to like ease. It's so important. I think it's something, particularly as we're all working remotely, it can feel like you're just plugged into a meeting from 9 p.m. till 6. And if you can take 10 minutes to just speak about nonsense, then that can actually, and as a leader, if you're making that behavior seem acceptable, I think it's really important.
Oh, I'm with you on that. It's one of my values. The first series of the podcast, the thing that came out of it was really understanding yourself from everyone that I spoke to. It was all about you need to understand yourself before you can do anything. And I'd never really taken any time to really understand what my values were. So yeah. I've spent a bit of time recently doing that. And that's exactly what came out of mine. It was treating people like I want to be treated, yeah. And having fun and humor and laughter, because life's too short. Like, yeah. You might as well have a silly half hour and make yourself feel a little bit better.
I really, yeah, that's it. Like the value of laughter, and it's just, yeah, I'm with you on that. It's so important.
I mean, we work so hard. You want to be able to enjoy it as well and take that like enjoyment out of your day. And you're right. And I think it's interesting at the moment, because are you back in the office now? Or are you still working all from home?
We're all still from home. Like our office is open, but I mean, we're over 100 people and we can only fit 20 in the office, so with social distancing, so we're still officially remote, and it's I think there's a bit of fatigue setting in.
Yeah, and it's keeping that culture, isn't it? Because we're really trying to figure out at the moment how we get everyone back in safely to keep the culture of the company going, because the office space isn't about the work, because we've all proven we can do the work from home. Yeah. But how do we get people back together to keep what makes social chain special was the culture? How do we make sure that we keep that going as we move forward? It's an interesting time.
We had I think it's exactly the same challenge for us, is absolutely like the office becoming that place where like if collaboration is needed, like we can all do our jobs from home. Bringing that culture to life is going to be really hard. Like our the Thursday drinks trolley doesn't really feel like something that is as easy to do, and normally that's a time where like two different people from the office would dress up. I've dressed up as a lemon for that trolley before. We've done some stuff remotely. We've had some really like fun moments. We did so we're based in Vauxhall, which obviously has a really like thriving drag scene, and we wanted to kind of support the drag community, which weren't booking shows, so we did a drag night through Zoom, which was very interesting. trying to find ways to still do that. Like, I mean, will we be having Christmas parties this year? I don't know.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. How do I do it, and how do I do it safely for everybody? I want to know a little bit more of the Thursday drink trolley. What was that?
It's a very unglamorous looking trolley, but we have a small budget to decorate it, and two people go every week, kind of choose what they want to serve, and then we go around the office serving people drinks at their desk. It's a great moment. We finish earlier on a Thursday and a Friday, and people can leave at 5 or they can hang around. And I think everyone, we've got a darts board. There's like lots of space where we normally can just like hang out and eat snacks, drink or not drink, and chill out. And yeah, but the trolley is retired at the moment.
Bring back the trolley. You'll know that we've got back to normal when the trolley's back out. Yeah. That'll be the moment, won't it? I'd like to talk now about Blooming Wild. We talked a bit about the office there. Can you tell me a bit about the Blooming Wild story, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were founded by Aaron, who is an incredible leader and CEO. And he always says that he knew that he wanted to do something good with his life, and he can't cure a disease or anything, but what better way to kind of dedicate your life than to like focus it on something that makes people so happy, and sending flowers is something that does that. But he's also like an incredibly smart guy, really tech focused. And I think he really noticed that the online flower delivery market was just really like customers were being really badly served. There was no easy way to pick up your phone and send flowers without having to go through a really painful process, and then also having to worry about is the person that I'm sending the flowers to going to be in? Like, do I need to let them know? Are they just going to get sent back to the delivery office? So he actually went around London measuring letterboxes to try and figure out what was the average letterbox size? And dreamt up this idea of sending flowers through the letterbox, which kind of gets rid of that issue of people needing to be in, and then kind of building a flower delivery company that had tech at its heart, so that we could really focus on, I guess, the other issue with the flower industry is there can be huge amounts of waste. So building tech into how we forecast, how we know how many flowers to order, so that we can kind of quite accurately, and honestly, some days it's incredible, like to the number, what the teams predict of how many orders will come that day, and that it will hit it like bang on target. So that we know exactly how many flowers that we need, and we're able to kind of improve the industry in that way as well. I think we're nearly 7 years old, and we're now in France and Germany. And I think some of the stuff that the company have learned along the way, I think this, what I talked about earlier about our customers actually being women sending flowers to women, I think that was a bit of a surprise. It's really like the majority of them are. And with that, it kind of highlighted that the industry is so focused around romance and this idea of a man sending flowers to women, which does happen. And absolutely, that's an amazing gesture. But there's also like all of this amazing women lifting each other up, or friends reaching out to each other just because they've managed to successfully work their cappuccino machine that they bought at Christmas and never got around to doing. And it's like, it's kind of grown into this great brand, which I think really tries to support and be part of the thoughtfulness that we're seeing that people have for each other.
Yeah, and we've discussed before we started recording that the key message is lightening up lives. How do you ensure that gets across to consumers?
I think it's really important for us that both the sender and the recipient have an amazing journey, and it's we're trying harder now than ever before, and we kind of touched on UGC, but like ways that we can kind of bring the stories to life of the reasons why people send flowers. But for us as a brand, and what we can do from an experience perspective, is really make sure that the person sending the flowers feels good whilst doing it. And important things within that are making sure that our tone of voice really takes them on that journey, that the experience is really seamless, so it just feels like a delightful thing to do. And that they're updated and feel like they can trust us as the flowers are being packed and sent out to their recipient. And then on the receiving end, from the moment that person opens that box, like it needs to be, we need to pour in the care that the person who sent the flowers to them has for them. So we really, really, really focus on that unboxing experience, how we can go further than here are just your flowers, to really giving them detailed instructions on how to get the most out of them, constantly thinking about new ways that we can continue to improve the messages that we're giving them, to kind of give them new ideas and new ways to experience flowers. And then the small touches as well, like making sure that gift cards are free, because if you're sending flowers, like that's the thing that you're paying for, and you should be able to add a note without having to pay for that. And just like those thoughtful touches, I think is how we try and light up the life of both people, so that they can have that kind of shared experience.
I love your gift cards that come with them. I bought one for my friend during lockdown, whose grandparents sadly passed away, and I just love the difference in there was just some really nice messages on the cards. It's like it's the right sort of sentiment for what I wanted to send. Yeah, I love the customer experience at Bloom and Wild. I think you're doing an amazing job. As both a sender and a receiver of flowers. I've had the subscriptions before as well. Just love them, like unboxing and taking the roses out of their absolutely the best thing ever. If I was looking at another career, I think floristry is something that I'd, because I just think they're just so beautiful and so diverse, that thinking of different ways to use different flowers and colours, and yeah, anyway, I could go on about that. You mentioned before about tech, and I want to talk a little bit about COVID, because it'd be really super interesting to know about how tech has helped you manage the flow of COVID, and talk a little bit about sales and whether they increased, decreased, how you managed demand throughout the lockdown period.
Yeah, so I think from a like business as a whole, it was, we were really lucky, and I think like a lot of younger companies experienced this, that the sudden like switch to home working was a lot more seamless for us than it was for more established companies that maybe hadn't. You know, I was speaking to my stepdad actually, and there were people on his team that have desktops, and they were like suddenly scrambling to buy them laptops so that they can work from home. There's like the really practical part of just like, because we're a tech company, like we're all used to communicating through Slack and like, and doing things remotely, everything's on a Google Doc, like the ability to collaborate through video conversations or through digital channels was just already there. In terms of like actually having the infrastructure set up, we ramped up as we do towards Mother's Day to deal with more people being on the site, dealing with more orders, having higher supply levels than we do throughout the rest of the year. And I can't share like too much, but we had to basically continue at that rate, and we have been really fortunate. We haven't been impacted negatively at all by COVID-19, and I think with that, it just means that we've kind of had to keep the foot on the gas ever since March, the end of March. But yeah, it's we've made, because of that, like we've been hiring quite a lot through lockdown as well, which is something which has been great that we've been able to do, particularly with people being furloughed or losing their jobs. But particularly within the tech team, we've had to really kind of scale up like our, what we're doing there in order to meet demand.
How do you bring them into the culture of Bloom and Wild with the new starters? Because everyone was obviously at home and is still at home. How have you managed to make sure that they feel part of a team?
Yeah, so we do, so we have buddies, which is something that we have in the office anyway. So we try and encourage, like we'll pair people up so that they can have virtual lunches together, and it'll be someone from like another area of the team, just so that they feel like they're still like meeting new people. Also at interview process, and this is something that we do, like even if we were in the office, but it feels more important now, is along with meeting people that you're directly reporting into, we try and give candidates a chance to actually meet other people from the team, so that, because they don't get that experience of walking to the office, and you know, sometimes you just get a feel like, do we seem happy, like are these the type of people that I want to hang out with? So making sure that that's already there, and then it means that there's already some people that you've met during the interview process that you don't have to immediately impress, that you can kind of go and chat to. And then like small things, like we do like, we have little Q&As with new starters before they join, so that an email goes out with like information about them. And I think that gives good icebreakers. For someone joined the tech team recently and they said that they didn't like okra. So then that gave me a really great in to be like, excuse me, nice, welcome to the company, but why don't you like okra? It's amazing. So I guess like those are like small things. And then as a company, it's kind of the thing that kind of builds, and it's hard to tell people to do it. And we're very fortunate that we're just full of a team of people that you just know will make sure that people feel welcome and comfortable. Yeah, I think that's the ever important bit. It's good now that the office is a bit more open. Like new starters have had a chance to kind of go in and meet people in real life. Someone was saying to me, someone who joined our France team during lockdown, was saying she went to the office for the first time a couple of weeks ago and was really surprised by how tall or short some people were. And it like, it makes me think, it's like, oh, I wonder, like, does she think I'm tall? Does she think I'm short?
I really like the idea of being able to meet other people, like for the interviewee to speak to people internally before they decide whether it's something that they want to pursue rather than, because a lot of the time I think companies think of interviews as one way, like we're choosing them rather than the other way around. And I've said on the podcast before that it's very much when you go into an interview, it's all about you finding somewhere that's right for you as well.
Yeah.
You're interviewing them. So I think that's a really nice idea.
Yeah.
I bet people get a lot out of that actually. Have you had many people say, yeah, no, this isn't for me?
No, it hasn't happened. I mean, it is like, it really is an amazing place to work. And I've worked, I feel like I've worked in a lot of really cool places. It's a culture unlike anything else that I've experienced before. I have in previous jobs, I won't say which agency, but I've experienced like things where people have joined, gone for lunch and just not come back.
I've had that somewhere. Someone said they were going to Boots and never came back. I couldn't do that. I couldn't just walk out and leave.
No, it's it's pretty funny. I had one of my best friends did something similar in an interview. She said that she was proficient in Excel, and then they were like, cool, so we just need you to do an Excel test. And she just, instead of just saying, oh, I'm not as proficient as I said I was, she waited for them to leave the room and just left through the fire escape.
I feel like I should do this as a podcast series, like interview faux pas or like worst interview story.
It'd be brilliant.
It would be brilliant, wouldn't it? So going back to the lovely subject of COVID, did you need to pivot the business at all? I'm guessing from what you said you did, because the speed that you went into Mother's Day and then had to continue that. What were the biggest changes internally that you had to make sure that you could continue at that level?
Yeah, I think it was really odd. So we ended up in a position where we at some point ended up having to turn off our advertising because demand was so high. But from a brand perspective, like our customers are going through a massive change, and it didn't feel right for us to stop talking to our customers just because we didn't want something from them. And I think that we had, like, going into Mother's Day, we had just launched the Thoughtful Marketing Movement, which was around offering, trying to encourage more businesses to offer opt-out of sensitive occasions, which is something we'd started the year before, but had actually turned into this. Like, we'd started that community, 130 brands had joined us, and then suddenly we were in a pandemic, and we realized that we had this group of businesses that had already kind of held their hands up and said, we think that there's a better way to do marketing, and it's about truly putting your customer first. And that not be, by customer first, we're not talking about looking at data to target the right segments. We're talking about thinking about people like you think about your friends and actually what makes sense for them. So we realized that, okay, we still want to talk to our customers. It's kind of hard because we don't have like heaps and heaps and heaps to kind of sell at the moment. What is it that our customers are wanting from us? And we use this community as a way and a forum of discussing that. Like, what are the challenges collectively that we think consumers are having, and how can we solve that? So our pivot actually it turned into, how can we be useful to our customers right now? If we're about lighting up lives, if we're about being uplifting, and even when you're having dark days, like finding a way to brighten them a little bit, what are the ways that we can do that? And we did really small activations on social just to kind of test the waters, stuff like the Thoughtful Gesture Generator, which just gave people like little ideas of things that they could do to reach out to people and kind of encourage that conversation. Through to kind of bigger things like making sure that if we're having success, we were doing something with that success. So partnering with the National Emergencies Trust Coronavirus Appeal, we've raised £200,000 to date, which is just amazing. And with that, also thinking about how we can bring our customers on that journey. So we started a key worker nomination where we gave away 10 bouquets every week to people that could be nominated by their friends or family. So our pivot was more around like, all right, we've actually got space to just talk to our customers rather than like talk at them about the products that we're selling.
Nice, really nice. And you touched there on the thoughtful marketing movement. It's something I want to talk to you about now. You started it last year, as you said. Could you explain a little bit more about it, how it came about, and then the journey you've gone on to bring other brands with you on that journey?
Yeah, definitely. So we last year, we were planning a Mother's Day campaign, and in 2018, our customers' light team had noticed that a handful of customers had either written in or called in and asked to unsubscribe from our emails around the Mother's Day period. And when they kind of were pressed on, was there any reason why, they just kept saying, you're sending me a lot of emails about Mother's Day and it's not relevant to me, or explicitly saying it's quite painful, like I don't have a mother or my mother passed away. And thankfully, because of this culture that we have of just anyone being able to share an idea, I think that was fed back when it came to reviewing kind of the retros for Mother's Day planning the year afterwards. It's like, okay, what can we do about this? So we spoke to the tech team. They were like, well, we could kind of use a similar feature for when people kind of unsubscribe from newsletters, but just make it an opt-out button and segment that group into a section of customers that have said, I don't want to hear about Mother's Day. So we were like, okay, great, that sounds good. What we could also do is then continue to send them emails throughout March, still give them offers, but just like remove the mention of Mother's Day, make it about different inspiration. And I guess we kind of thought, well, that's probably a month where they could have had birthdays that they wanted to buy for, or they could have had other reasons, but they're shut off and then they're not listening to us because we're not being relevant to them. So we kind of created these two email tracks. We thought it would be fairly straightforward and maybe a few hundred people would unsubscribe. We sent out the email on a Sunday, which we definitely wouldn't do again, because the response was just absolutely phenomenal. It was really like people, we hadn't planned on it being anything other than just like a tactic to segment an audience of people that didn't want Mother's Day emails. We didn't expect it to become this like big social story. But all of us were calling like whoever was available, like being like, oh, can you jump on Twitter? Can you jump on Instagram? Like there's just so many customers or people that haven't even shopped with us before being like, this is incredible. Like I've never seen a company do this before. By Monday, it was like all the press coverage was in. It was really, really great. And I think that year we had 18,000 customers opt out of Mother's Day emails, which was a lot more than what we'd expected. But the story kind of kept going. So we ended up being mentioned in Parliament. There was a debate around grief counselling and what brands or companies could be doing. Like, should it be an ASA guideline that you should be able to have this more tailored marketing experience? And we continued doing it for other sensitive occasions. But when it came around to this year, we were kind of like, okay, if we really truly care about people having a nicer experience during sensitive times, we've seen that other brands are also offering opt-out, which is great. Instead of just kind of looking at that and being like, oh, that's good that they're doing it. Like, could we be doing more for other companies that haven't done it yet, either because they're not aware of it as something that you could offer, or because they think that it's going to be like a really difficult thing to do from a tech perspective. Could we create guidelines and instructions, offer our support, and kind of generate a movement of people that sign up to offer opt-out? So we did. We thought we'd start kind of messaging it around Mother's Day, and it really kind of picked up traction. And a lot of brands signed up that were already offering opt-out and started promoting it as well. And then we had quite a few companies that actually all they needed was a 10-minute call with us for us to kind of take them through the really basics of like how you can do it without tech or with very little tech, and then how you can do it with more tech, and sharing ideas with them of how we were taking it a step further. So this year round, and to date, we now have 160,000 customers opted out. So that's huge.
Huge.
Those are customers that like potentially were just ignoring us for a whole month to talk to, and also that were having a painful experience potentially. And we've improved the experience even more. So we really like any own channel where we're unable to to know if people are opted out or not. We just choose not to call out any sensitive occasions. So Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day. If you are opted out and you're logged into our site, we remove the mention of the occasion you're opted out from across our whole site experience. So everything from like the navigation, you wouldn't see a Mother's Day navigation, through to if you go to save an occasion, we won't suggest Mother's Day as an occasion. Like, we really try to make sure that every touch point that they have of us, we're kind of erasing that mention. But yeah, so we kind of built this community. As I mentioned, 130 brands signed up, which is great. We've kind of been working with the DMA on a thoughtful marketing award and ways that we can like think about thoughtfulness in bigger ways. And we attempt to each month try and speak to that community about new topics which are also kind of fall under this umbrella of thoughtfulness. So the first thing that we came together to discuss was how we can kind of respond and support our customers during a pandemic. And that was practical things like, maybe don't call out payday at the moment. Like, it could be something that's like potentially triggering, through to like broader things of like, yeah, how do you find a charity to support that really aligns with your customers' values? And then through to June, we had the protest following the killing of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter movement. So we knew that a lot of businesses, particularly smaller ones, were struggling to know if as a brand they should say something or if they should say nothing, or like if they say something, how do they do it without looking like it's virtue signaling? And we could just have a conversation. And we were like, we don't have the answers, but we can definitely facilitate that conversation. So we ran a panel with various other people from diversity and inclusion agencies, Ben Cohen, the CEO of Pink News, to talk about supporting Black communities, LGBT communities, and what we could do as marketers to champion them, so that if we're showing support for Black Lives Matter, we're actually then making like visible steps to improve our practices as a business. So this kind of thoughtful marketing movement, which started as a very small tactic to do with an email, has like blossomed into a really great vehicle for challenging those conversations that don't always like hit the top of a marketer's list of stuff that they know they should be thinking about, but maybe aren't.
And you're challenging that comparison culture that you mentioned at the beginning, which is really nice, isn't it? Because the one thing you wanted to teach that you should have told yourself at 18, you're actually managing to lead the charge in now.
I haven't really thought about it that way. Yeah, I guess so. There you go, 18-year-old Marissa.
I'm going to start to wrap up now because I'm conscious of your time. But I'd love to talk to you about personally how you've coped with COVID. How have the last few months been for you?
Yeah, I think, like, if I'm honest, they've been really tough. Like, it's like I thought I would love working from home. It's really hard to keep your energy levels. I don't know how, when you technically have more time to sleep, I just feel like not having a change of environment is really hard. And I think I'll hold my hands up to, I've fallen into bad habits. I wish I was somebody who'd like got a new hobby or started exercising more, but I think like my waistline has grown and my muscle mass is definitely depleted, but I'm kind of like okay with it. I've got to a point where I'm just like, do you know what, like I think whether you've been affected directly by the pandemic or if you've just been affected in the way that all of us have by the constant stream of news, the change in our lives, like the real shift in what our routine feels like, it's kind of okay if like it gets to the end of the evening and all you can really do is lie in the bath and watch TikTok.
TikTok's been the savior, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. But it's been hard. Like, yeah, I think I'm really grateful that like the business and like the colleagues that I've got and like the team around me, they're just all really brilliant. And that's been like really, really great. But yeah, I think it's difficult to say that it's easy to feel like you're doing your job to the best of your ability when you're just stuck in the same place and not getting the same experiences or surrounded by the same culture, and everything kind of feels like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, I can sympathise with that.
Yeah, how are you finding?
Do you know what? I'm actually really loving life now. I think I live on my own though, so at the beginning it was a bit of a struggle. And just having that monotonous, got to get up, get on Zoom calls all day was really tiring. And then now that I've got the choice that I can come into the office a couple of days a week, I'm in control of whether I can do the commuting time, whether I don't, feel really like free and light, and the stress isn't there as much. Yeah. So now in this point of it, I'm actually loving life, and my house is all sorted. I did loads of jobs in lockdown that was putting off. So yeah, I can't complain. I've actually come out of it better than I went into it. So
have you gained any DIY skills?
No, my dad has to check everything off. So I've got some fence painting that I've got to do that I'm not allowed to do until he can come round and do it. And yeah, even at the age of 36, I'm not allowed to do my own house jobs. he has to supervise. probably wise, because I'd make a mess of it. The podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, and that's because I always say things that young female managing director probably shouldn't be saying out loud. And my big thing is often about, if you can't see it, you can't be it. So, and like you said at the beginning, to show yourself off as a human, and you make mistakes. So I would love it if you've got an admission submission that you can share with the listeners.
Okay, well, maybe, yeah, fine. I think my I shouldn't say this, but, or like admission, if I make it around work, is like, I procrastinate loads, like, and I think everybody like does. And it really, I've had to figure out that for me, like, I am available 9 to 6, and like, I do my best work during that time, working with teams and getting stuff out of them. When it comes to stuff that I know that I need to do, like, it ends up happening at weird times. And I've kind of got to the point where I'm just kind of like I've felt so guilty for it. And yeah, I don't know, maybe that's a maybe I could probably think of other ones, but yeah, I think sometimes it feels like everyone is really switched on all the time, but I'm sure that not everyone is all the time, and definitely during lockdown my procrastination has increased a lot.
I don't think you're alone there. I think I'm the same, as quite often I feel like I should be doing more than sometimes I actually am, and then I go off into some sort of daydream. And yeah, you're definitely not on your own there, and I think the listeners would really feel comforted by the fact that you also do that as well.
Yeah.
So that was a good one. I just want to say a massive thank you. I could talk to you for hours, but I'm just so cautious of your time.
I'm enjoying this. This is like...
No, and just like huge, huge thank you for coming on. I love the brand. Your journey is incredible. It's been a pleasure. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, it's been great to chat to you this morning.
Good. Thank you so much. Well, that was just incredible, wasn't it? Really, really enjoyed that conversation, and it's made me look forward to the amazing guests we've got coming up as well. We've got some people from loads of different sectors. We've got more tech companies. We've got startups. We've just got an array of different skills, different people, different industries. And I really, really am looking forward to the next few weeks. And this series of the podcast is going to be so good. Can't wait for you to hear it. I'd love your feedback. Please, obviously, like, subscribe, give us your ratings. 5 stars only. Thank you very much. And also send your admission submissions in. We're going to be doing that. So every week we're going to be doing either a solo podcast or a guest podcast, and we're going to alternate. So send your admission submissions in to www.katieleeson.com, and I will make sure that they're included in the solo episodes. I'm so happy to be back. Honestly, this is just, it fills my heart with so much joy. I hope you've really enjoyed this episode as much as I have, and I will see you next week.